Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth.
That was awesome. Hang on one second. I'm going to play that again because we went into the show laughing. Hang on.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. Elizabeth is the CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, a leading multimedia provider of lifestyle content. The Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. It's where you'll find inspirational and encouraging stories, advice, and information with our radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Real people, real advice, real places, real products and businesses, real life stories, and more, including real celebrity life. Be your best and keep it real, confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You. Now, here's your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
Should I play that again one more time, Gabe? That's pretty funny. How are you, Gabe? We've got Gabe with us, everybody.
Hello, all.
Yeah, exactly. Gabe Berman, everybody. He's the author of Live Like a Fruit Fly. And, you know, we've got you here for an hour, and we're completely unrehearsed. We're completely... I'm going to go with unprepared, and I kind of like it that way. What do you think?
Well, you might be unrehearsed, but I have a whole script that I wrote out before this. I'm just going to read it verbatim, so maybe the questions will fit, maybe they won't.
Okay, good. I'll just be quiet. How's that sound? Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, I'll just read.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll be like that. What'd you say? What was that show before we went on live?
Actor Studio
or something? Yeah, exactly. All right. All right. So in all seriousness, I was out kind of sick about 2 weeks ago, and I was laying upstairs pretty much trapped on the upper floor of my house with a huge back injury. I fell in a parking lot. It was really funny. Gabe, you're allowed to laugh, but he said he wouldn't. But, I went flying, like in a van over a speed bump. I mean, I went flying, and so I've been upstairs. I can finally walk the past few days. But anyway, this whole host of books came in for me to review. Well, I was sick. And so I'm looking around at all these books, and, you know, some of them really suck. And this one is, you know, sitting next to me, and I'm sitting there going, Live Like a Fruit Fly. What the heck is that? It's kind of orange on the cover and, you know, kind of like The Secret I Already Need to Know by, you know, Gabe Berman. So I picked it up, and I literally read it probably in an hour and a half because it was such good reading. And then I reread it. And then I reread it, and then I reread it, and I'm like, I got to find this guy. Who's this Gabe guy? And so here we are today.
You know, after five reads, the book decomposes, so you can't give it to anybody else.
Exactly. This is kind of torn and tattered now at this point. But, you know, this is endorsed, you know, by the best of the best. You know, what do you have to say for yourself, Gabe?
With the Deepak Chopra endorsement?
Yeah. Well, everything, you know?
It was the miracle of miracles that happened, but I was blown away when it happened, but behind, you know, between you and I and whoever else is listening, I really wasn't that blown away because I just was expecting it the whole time, and it was a self-fulfilling prophecy. Not that I knew that I was going to be Deepak Chopra, but I knew something big was going to come along.
Really?
Yeah, it was either you or Deepak Chopra, so I settled for Deepak.
Exactly. Thank you. Do you, did you set out to do this always?
To write this type of book?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I had this life-changing book in my mind the whole time, but I always, since I was little, wanted to do something extraordinary, and I had no idea what it was. And then finally, I figured it out, and it just kind of happened. I mean, it feels like it happened overnight, but it definitely took quite some time.
Yeah. Did you, now you're in Florida. You weren't always in Florida. You were in New York. How did you go from New York? How'd you go from New York to Florida? Other than an airplane, of course, but I mean, why'd you make that move?
Well, I have family down here, and when I was young, we would always travel down here for, you know, the vacations, and I passed by University of Miami, and I just saw the palm trees and the sign that said University of Miami when I was little, and I said, I am definitely going here no matter what, and I was like 12, let's say, 12-ish, and when all my other friends in New York are applying to all the New York schools and applying to 15 different schools, I applied to University of Miami, and that's it. And I told my parents that if I don't get in there, then I'm just going to become a messenger in the city on one of those bicycles. And that was it. So
and here we are.
And here we are.
Yeah, and here we are with Live Like a Fruit Fly. I, you know, it's you know, people can't find it. You know, they've been in the chat room. It says I've been to 4 bookstores on the West Coast, 3 airports, and can't find it. So for
I'm
anybody
sure
listening,
what you, you can definitely order it from. You can definitely order it online on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and any other website. You can actually even go to Walmart.com, and I think it's like $1 cheaper there. But
yes.
Since the book came out August 1st, I guess it's just like trickling throughout the country, and it started off the East Coast, and I guess as it gets bigger, it'll go across, and I'm not sure why it's working that way, but it is.
Yeah, it's got to, you know, it's catching on. But you can go to hcibooks.com and buy it, but yeah, I did see it at Walmart too. It was a little bit cheaper, but yeah, it's definitely up there on HCI Books. Now, you have you been doing appearances and things like that and book signings? Do you have one coming up?
I have my first book signing coming up. Tuesday. Yep. This is my first official one.
Okay.
It's in my apartment, so
we can all line up.
So, yeah, you guys can just line up outside and dial in from like the FedEx guy, and I'll let you in. And
perfect. That works.
And if you have $100, I'll sign your book.
Yeah. Is there chocolate cake, cookies, things like that?
Yeah, there's chocolate cake if you bring chocolate cake. So
there
is whatever you bring.
Perfect. Keg, whatever.
Yeah, keg. We'll do keg stands. It'll be a fraternity and sorority party.
That's funny. All right. No, seriously, where is it?
It's at called Books and Books. It's in Coral Gables. It's a very cool bookstore in South Florida. It's where, you know, the cool people go to buy books, I guess. And it's not tremendous like a Barnes & Noble, but it's very unique, and it has a really cool atmosphere. And it's a great place for me. I mean, I couldn't pick a better place to have my first book signing.
Cool. And then what time?
6:30.
Okay, so bring your cameras, guys. Get your picture. Get your book. All that stuff. You're going to be signing. It's, you know, the reason why this is so important that you're on this call is because I really think, as I read this book, that, and you probably already know this about yourself, but I think that you're the great author of our time. I really do. I think that when, in all seriousness, I think that when we look back, people are going to have. This is required reading. It's either, I don't know if it's high school or college. I gave it to our superintendent of our schools to ask to see if it was high school or college. But I think it's really going to be one of those books that's a life changer, and people are going to go through college, and this is going to be on the required reading list. Do you think that of yourself?
Should I be nervous if the superintendent didn't call you back yet?
No, she already did. I sat next to her at the football game yesterday. She's like, that's a great book.
She's like, no, not really high school, maybe kindergarten. Is that what she said?
No. Do you
I mean, that's very cool of you to think that it's going to, you know, the book of the generation. And I hope you're right. I mean, I believe that this is great for people, you know, around 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, of course. Like, it's never too late to start your life over and really live authentically and live the life that you want to live. But imagine if all 16-year-olds out in the world started reading this right now. Like, they're still in high school, and they can start off living the life that they want now instead of the rest of us, how you have to suffer through so many jobs that you don't want to deal with. And just treating people the way you shouldn't be treating people. And thankfully, this book that I wrote that just took a year of my life explains that there's a way to go out there and get what you're looking for. And mm-hmm. if you don't get what you're looking for, at least you know that you're one of the rarities who've tried. And it's just, I would love it to be required reading. And I, not only because it's my book, I wish I had the book when I was 16. I probably would have wrote the book 10 years earlier.
Yeah, now somebody listening, Jane says, I totally agree. It's the way you should raise your children. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's part of what, you know, Best Ever You is too. I mean, I firmly believe, you know, the way we raise our kids too is, you know, you catch them young enough and you instill some, you know, morals and values and a really positive sense of living what's, you know, important and you know, moving forward, that, you know, it changes people and it shifts a whole direction of people in a different way. I asked you this the other day, and I didn't know if you dodged the question, but what's the crappiest job you've ever had? What's the one where you're just like, okay, I'm done?
Well, we only have an hour here to talk, so I'm going to have to be really brief then. crappiest job I've ever had. Did you ever see the movie Boiler Room?
Yeah.
Okay, I actually worked for the firm that was the sister firm of that in South Florida. It was in quotes an investment banking firm, but they actually had companies that didn't exist, and they sold stock for it. And I didn't know that was happening until the last second. And they, if you sat down for too long, they told you to stand up and kick your chair away. They yelled at you for going to the bathroom. They yelled at you for everything. And then one day I was called into the office because I didn't know that that's what they do. They screaming at me that I had 2 weeks to shape up or I can, you know, find a new job. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to go find a new job right this second. I just walked out. I've done that like 18 times without even having any backup because I know it's stupid. And I heard my dad in the back of my head saying, like, don't leave a job until you have a backup. But, you know, just people, life's too short to be treated that way. And if you show some guts, then things will work out for you, as thankfully I've proved. And hopefully it's not just a lot of luck that I had, because the more people that I talk to about the book, they say that when they follow their gut and they follow nothing but their gut, things seem to work out. Mm-hmm. So then I found out afterwards that I left a job where people were being stolen from anyway. So happily, I wasn't very good at that job, because that means I really didn't take any money from anybody.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Do you, you know, with Live Like a Fruit Fly, do you believe that, I wanted to clarify something just to make sure that people don't mistake it for living recklessly. I don't think that's what you're saying, and I wanted you to maybe talk about that. When you say seize the day, it doesn't mean, you know, go out and, you know, drive fast and hope you live through it or something like that. Can you clarify kind of what you mean by that?
Oh, right in the beginning of my book, I said to, although life is short and you just never know and you have to seize the day. Actually, seize the day doesn't even work for me anymore, because seize the day could be in 4 months from now. It's really about seize this day that you're in right this second. Like, no matter what you have going on, do take one little step towards the direction that you want to be in. So, no, it definitely does not mean live recklessly, because chances are you're going to live to see tomorrow. And I think I say in my book right in the beginning that, so don't jump out of a plane with a hastily packed parachute or waste all of your money on chocolate, although I can see myself doing the chocolate thing. But it definitely does not mean recklessly. It means to follow your gut, but you have to do what you have to do to get to the next day. So don't go out and quit your job just because you want to be a professional balloon folder. You know, fold balloons at night until you get really good, until, you know, maybe you're folding balloons in Carnegie Hall. But I just completely stole that from a Woody Allen movie, just so you know.
Yeah.
And but, you know, you'll have to keep your day job for a while until you get to where you want to go. But the beautiful thing is the second you actually start going after for what you want to do, let's say you want to be a writer, you actually start writing, that kind of just opens, like if you kick the first door open, the other doors will open up for you. And so many people I bump into, that they say, oh, I always wanted to be a writer. And I said, okay, we'll start writing tonight. And then I hear 500 excuses. And I'm like, well, I guarantee you, you're never going to make it as a writer if you don't start writing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Now, you talk a little bit about breadcrumbs. It kind of ties into what you just said about, you know, doors being open and going through them and things like that. Talk about what you feel are breadcrumbs, because I always think that, too. Like, you know, you kind of have to, you know, say, here's your sign, kind of thing. You know, you have to kind of see the path a little bit, and people put things in front of you, and if you don't walk through that door, or if you're afraid to walk through that door, you might not go forward. What do you think about that? What are breadcrumbs to you?
Well, you have to be really, really aware for breadcrumbs, and that, and also goes back to trusting your gut. You could be sitting at a dentist office, and the woman in the waiting room is talking to her nurse, and they're talking on the phone, and they're talking about something completely unrelated to your life. And then she just might say one thing which gives you a little bit of that idea, and that's the breadcrumb, the little idea that you hear, that's the message. And you will know if it's right or wrong just from your gut. Like, it happens to me still that I'll have an opportunity to do something like, oh my God, I hope this isn't a breadcrumb because I don't know how I feel about it. But then I remember the don't know how you feel about it, that's a sign that it's really not something that should be followed.
Exactly.
So breadcrumbs can come, you can be listening to it in the dentist's office, you can see, I saw this horrible movie the other night, and there was actually a Levi's commercial before the movie started, and that just inside of a commercial, something hit me so hard, which sent off a whole string of ideas in my head. So you just never know where they're coming from, but you have to pay real close attention. The beautiful thing about breadcrumbs, though, is once you start picking them up, the more of them you see.
Yeah. Yeah, and the gut check, too. You know, I think women in particular are very, very famous for not following their gut. We do a lot of interesting things to not pay attention to our gut, and in women especially, it causes a lot of internal things. We have a lot of heart problems and things like that when we really don't pay attention to what our intuition says or what our gut says. And so I think it's really important to point that out. But it's interesting to hear it from a guy, too, because, you know, on Best Ever You, we talk about this all the time. You know, Deb Scott and I talk about it all the time about, you know, women, listen to your intuition, listen to your gut. It makes you so you don't get sick. There's a lot of internal medical issues that creep up when you, you know, don't pay attention to what you're really thinking and ignore it. So interesting to hear it from a guy, though. Do you think that at all? Like, can you make yourself a little sick if you don't listen to really what your heart says?
Actually, I was just reading all this out of a Cosmo, so that's why it sounds like it makes sense.
I did, too. Got it right in front of me.
Yeah, mine's from 2 years ago. So I feel like it's equally as important for men because we will also feel health issues from it because, you know, stress is the biggest killer, and a lot of the stress comes from not living authentically and following that voice inside. And that voice doesn't have to be like the scary God religious voice that you will read about somewhere else. It just be as simple as your voice inside your ears that you know so well and you know to either trust it or not. I was reading some article about a nurse who took care of men as they were dying in their last weeks of their life, and most of them had the same five issues, which of course I don't remember all five, that they, you know, they wished they had a better life, but one of them definitely was they just wished they followed their gut because they know that things would have worked out differently.
Yeah.
And life is so short. I mean, you have to
it's
go
scary,
out.
It's scary, though. It's scary to follow your gut. You know, what if you are sitting there in a really high-paying job, but you really do want to go be an actor or a writer or, you know, a singer or a guitar player or whatever. When you follow the arts, it's very scary because there's this thing where there's maybe not as much money with it for a while, or you might have to suffer for a little bit or something. Have you experienced that with writing this book at all?
Well, I feel like it's scarier not to follow your gut because I just know we're not following my gut leads me all the time,
yeah?
Every single time I've denied it, even if it's something stupid like, oh, I shouldn't eat Thai food tonight, like, you're going to pay the price when you know that your gut's telling you what to do. Not out of fear or anything. It's just out of, your gut's giving you a directive, and if you choose to ignore it, then you choose to ignore it. But if you're, you know, if you're out making six figures somewhere and you really just want to play guitar, there's time for both, and you don't just quit that six-figure job just so you can play. But when I first started writing, and I got a gig. We can go through that later if you want to. But I got a job writing with the Miami Herald about 8 years ago, and I was still keeping my corporate job that I completely hated. And that's just me. And if you're in a corporate job that you like, you know, God bless you. I'm happy for you. I just couldn't do it, although I did it for quite some time.
I did too. I had
and
to quit.
It was the worst.
I quit and made cookies for a long time. I made 100,000 cookies in a period of I don't know how many years and just make cookies.
Well, if you can send me some of those,
I'll appreciate
it.
You know what, though? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're in a cookie moment. The cookies are important in my life. When I went to mail a box of cookies out to the West Coast the other day, and 12 cookies weighed 7 pounds. 7 pounds, Gabe. Oh, my God.
You put platinum in your cookies or red?
I don't know.
Want to hear something remarkable, though?
Just about 7 pounds.
Something remarkable about the serendipity of the universe. I was speaking to someone about 30 minutes ago about how their mom wants to start a cookie business and she just is finding excuses not to.
Yeah.
And some of the excuses are valid, but if something that you feel passionate about, then you just have to do it. Even if it's just making one cookie and giving it away for free for somebody, you never know where that one free cookie will lead you. You just never know. But I guarantee you.
Oh.
What's that?
No, go ahead. You guarantee me what?
No. I guarantee you, if you don't give away that one free cookie, it'll go nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. Now, our chat room's going nuts with this conversation. Got to follow the gut. Life's short, even if you live to 100. I literally almost worked myself to death, went back to school, got my degrees. A couple of professors liked what I was writing for them and pushed me to get serious about my writing. And then he had a chance to meet Wally Lamb, and now he's writing. Somebody else says, follow the art. Where there is great art, there's always heaven. I love it. And putting yourself out there makes you vulnerable to other people's judgment. So people are really, talking it up. So
But it's not just about art. It's not about just being a writer or being a guitar player or anything or making cookies. It's like if you, you know, if your passion is to be a mechanic and fix motorcycles, and your whole family is they're all doctors, well, that's their problem.
Yeah.
You know, it's not your problem. And if your passion is to fix motorcycles, you know, we're all going to be dead soon anyway. So you have to do what you feel passionate about, and you cannot live in the expectations of others. So it's not just about being an artist. It's just doing what you know to be right for yourself, because we're all here for our own purpose. And the good news is you can decide what that purpose is.
Yeah. I opened my mouth about cookies, and now somebody in the blog wrote, "We all want cookies." Great.
Yeah. Do you mind if I just hang up on you for a while, and I'm just going to go get some cookies? Is that okay?
Get some cookies. So, all right. So Alan Combs loves this book, too. How did you go about meeting him?
That's just one of the beautiful stories that unfolded because of writing the book. And he became a good friend, and just from one step led to the other. He was actually looking at a book on Amazon called I Am That, and it's about a 70-80-year-old guy in India who just figured out how to become enlightened. And the second it happened, people just started lining up at his little hut. And he wrote this beautiful book, which is very deep and very spiritual, and you can't just pick that up and read it out of nowhere. Like, you have to be studying this stuff for a long time, which I have, and that's why I read the book, and that's why I wrote my book, because I wanted it something to be for everyone. So the review that when Alan was looking at I Am That, one of the reviews said, "This is a great book, but if you want something that will hit you over the head right this second, then go buy Live Like a Fruit Fly." So he bought the book, loved the book, and started to send me emails, which for some reason I didn't see for a month. And then I finally opened up the emails, and we hit it off right away, and a couple days later I was in New York City being interviewed by him. So it worked out really well.
Yeah, yeah. What, so the one thing that I'm learning about you is that you're very well-read, you're very well-spoken, and you're very well-educated. And the book... Your book is very conversational.
It, okay.
Yeah, here. You think?
Thanks.
You can send me the $20 for that compliment. No. Yeah, exactly. Your book is so conversational. How do you go from reading all of these, you know, incredible books about, you know, spirituality and, you know, self-help to writing such a conversational book?
Well, it's a combination there, because I read so many of the books in the New Age and the Eastern philosophy section and the spiritual section and the regular philosophy section, and I just didn't want to sound like that. Plus, it never worked for me, because I always felt like I was being preached to by people who are they? Like, I don't know. They're not, the book doesn't say Jesus underneath it or Moses or Muhammad or anything, but it's not coming from the source. Like, they're just coming from regular people. And I didn't know how to trust it, but everyone made it sound like it was directly out of the Bible or directly out of the heavens. And I just felt like that wasn't real and it wasn't working for me. So I knew that if I was ever going to write a book like this, I would just make it sound like just one person to another, because, you know, I can play the guru game, but it just doesn't work. And I've found that people appreciate it when you're vulnerable and you're real. And if I didn't live it, then no one would be able to believe me. So that's the first part. And the second part is that I just write conversationally. And everyone asks me, if like, oh, well, how many journalism classes did you take in college? And thankfully, I didn't take any of them. Because I believe if I was taught how to write... I'm sorry?
I said you're lucky. I took all of them for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, but you have it too. You write really conversationally. And if I believe that if I was taught how to write, it would completely stifle the way I write. I don't follow any kind of rules. I mean, it seems like the language is flowing, but I'm not thinking about, like, oh, I wonder if this is going to work better with this kind of punctuation or verb arrangement. Like, I just write how I speak, and I'm definitely not Hemingway, but it's not the easiest to write as you speak. But it just, thankfully, I mean, it's the miracle of miracles that I am able to do it.
Yeah, that's how
it might take me. It might take me 7 hours to write a paragraph, but it seems like it took 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, I write that way, too. I had to throw out everything I learned in journalism school, because they punctuate everything, and I think that's part of chatting and texting, too. Punctuation just goes right out the window, and I'm a dot, dot, dot girl. Dots and hyphens and parentheses are my friends. Gosh, we have so many questions for you. People want to know how long it took you to write the book and kind of what the writing process was like. I think a lot of people who want to write a book or start writing a book want to know how. What do? Do you really just pick up a pen and a pad of paper or a computer and go for it? Or do you outline it? Or, you know, what's that process?
I believe everyone is different with the way they have to do it, but everyone's the same with one thing, that if you don't start, it's never going to happen. And you just have to start. If you have kind of a couple of ideas or not sure which way to go, just start. And then you open up. And the way I look at writing, it's just I just decide to write, and I sit there, and I wait for the words to come, and I almost have nothing to do with the process. The way I view it is I'm given puzzle pieces, and I just have to put that puzzle together. And sometimes I'm a master at it, and it takes me an hour to write 700 words, or it can take me literally 9 hours to write 700 words, which is just 2 pages or so.
Mm-hmm.
So the way it happened with my book, I'm not sure which order I should answer the question, but it took me exactly a year. And when I say exactly a year, I started a couple years ago on February 9th. The only reason why I know that is because it was my good friend's birthday. And I called him. And I said, okay, I found my calling on this planet, and I'm giving myself a year to write it. And if I don't finish in a year, you have my permission to come to South Florida and kill me, because I'm not going to do anything else. I'm going to make this book happen.
It's happening.
So, I don't know. That kind of made him happy to know that he can kill me for some reason. So that's a whole different
story.
Which
method did he dream of it? Did you get, like, little notes, like emails?
Yeah, I think he's going to do a samurai motif, I think, to show up samurai. But
spin-off.
Not really sure. So I started the book, and I wrote crazy for a couple of months, and then I got sidetracked, and then I got annoyed, and then things weren't flowing so well, so I stopped, and I knew that I couldn't force the issue, so I would just write when I know that when I had really something to say. And then everything was going smooth again, and I finally wrote the end, and I swear, I looked at the little corner of my computer where it says the time and the date, and it was February 9th. So with absolutely no planning, just because I said it was going to happen, it took exactly a year. So, and there was my friend outside disappointed with the samurai sword, I guess.
Bummer.
So, and another great, just to add, if that's okay, about
samurai
how I do
sword.
It.
I can just see the samurai sword, right? Though. Sorry, I'm interrupting you.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sorry.
Is I make sure that the first sentence or first paragraph is incredible, or as incredible as it can be, that you can hit somebody over the head, and no matter what comes after it, they have to keep reading. Because there are so many phenomenal writers out there that their first sentence is so pathetic that they feel that they don't need to hit me over the head, which is fine. They've just lost me as an audience, which is, I'm sure they don't care about because they're best-selling authors. But even the newspaper, you can read one article, and the first couple of words are so boring or about them or something that has nothing to do with anything that I'm done. So my goal every time I write is to make my first sentence count.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a half hour here left to talk to you. And we're going to go a little off track, you know, not that we haven't with cookies and stuff, but can we talk about, like, stormtroopers and Luke and Darth and Yoda? And
well, if I only have a half hour to talk about Star Wars, sure.
Oh, Star Wars, I would all memorize. Do you watch Clone Wars by any chance? Like the
cartoon
Clone Wars? Yeah.
I've seen it before with my nephews.
I'm not loving it as much as, like, Star Wars.
There's definitely a cheese factor to it, which I definitely don't appreciate. I'm one of those people who despise the prequels and everything about them, but I'm so in love with the original three, so that's what I stick to.
If you could be a Star Wars character, which one would you be?
Luke, guaranteed, without even thinking about it.
Yeah, I remember kind of growing up thinking Luke was pretty cute, too. Luke was kind of hot. I don't know where he is now, but he was hot, Luke.
Mark Hamill?
Yeah, I don't know why I thought he was cute, but yeah, I guess so. I don't know where he is now, but maybe we'll have to find him. Luke, huh? So you'd be Luke. Why would you be Luke? This is important stuff, because this is important Gabe stuff, guys. Everybody listening, you're like, why are you talking about Star Wars? Well, Gabe loves Star Wars, and it's in the book. So,
I mention it from time to time, and I also apologize every time I mention it, because I know that there's some people like, oh, here he goes, here's another Star Wars reference. But, you know, guys growing up and who are 30-ish years old right now, or 20, 30, 40, who we all just grew up with Star Wars, and it was a main thing in our life.
Yeah.
And some of us maybe not won't admit it. So I had to make references to it. And just a side note, because I kept on making references to it and I kept on apologizing, I'm actually writing the sequel to the book right now. And just to get it right out of the way, right from the beginning, it's actually called, as long as I don't get sued, The Fruit Fly Strikes Back, just as an Empire Strikes Back. But I just get the reference out right out of the way.
Let's get it out of
so
the way.
So why would I choose? I choose Luke because Luke was just some kid with a pretty bad haircut, although you liked it, in the middle of the desert, who was unconnected to anything. And his life seemed pretty pointless. He just wanted to be a pilot, but his uncle was keeping him down and made him be a farmer, and it just wasn't working for him. And for every kid who just growing up...
He wants to be a farmer, darn it.
Right, he wants to be a farmer. Things are just not clicking the way you'd want to click. Like, everyone's trying to, I don't know, go to college to become a lawyer or a doctor or an accountant, and you just feel like there's something else calling you, or you feel that you've been made for something else. So this kid who's just in the middle of the desert with a bad haircut just finds out that that you like, and some other people may, that it turns out that this guy, this kid, learns the way of the Force, which means learning the way of real life, and is the one to save the entire universe from destruction and evil. So I see myself, not that I'm saving the universe, but I'm just doing my little step about telling people to go after people, and that's how I'm trying to save people. I'm not trying to save people, but I'm giving people the little kick in the butt to be like, you know, your life is going to be ending soon. I know we don't want to believe that, but it's true. So you might as well just go after what you believe in and be kind to people. So the Luke Skywalker thing is big for me because one person alone in a desert can make such a difference. And that means everyone who's listening now and anyone who's born can make a tremendous difference.
Somebody wrote, why don't you play Yoda? Or do you play off Yoda? Why Luke? But now we got that answer. But why not Yoda? Because Yoda, you know, you're kind of the wise one. Why? We got to ask, why not Yoda? We're on the Star Wars kick here. We need to get it out of the way. And by the way, guys, real quick in the chat room, we've got who's hotter, Gabe or Luke? And Gabe's winning. So we got that chat thread going on. So keep going with that.
I'm a lot taller than Luke, so maybe that's
yeah.
Part of the reason.
How tall are you?
I'm 7'5". No, I'm
7'5",
just about
6'2". 6'2", yeah. Right. And you've got much better curls than that. Yeah, but you know, that's the Iowa in me. I was raised in Iowa, so you know, Luke was it.
The farm boy look. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
I'm a city kid. I'd stand out in Iowa. So
exactly.
Why not Yoda?
Yeah.
Yoda, I don't really know his background, but he is the master, and we find him as the master. And, you know, it's a really, really good question because I was just having this conversation with someone the other day who I believe really is an enlightened master, a friend of mine. And we were talking about the people like Eckhart Tolle, who wrote Power of Now, and there's Byron Katie and Dalai Lama, and all these people had these phenomenal things happen to them and became masters, and then told people about it. I don't know any of them who started from nothing and went after what they believed in and then were able to tell people about it. So that's what we know, that, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi is great and Yoda is awesome because they're masters already, but Luke was just some kid, and he made it on his own. I mean, yes, you know, he's connected to everything because of who his father is, but we don't have to go through all that. But the moral of the story is that he's the guy who pushed it and wasn't starting off as a master.
Yeah. Do you think you're going to have to go with this book to, like, a Star Wars convention?
I think that George Lucas might be reading my book a little bit too closely, if so, and then find something to sue me for. So we thought...
Okay. So no Chewbacca thing. I kind of think he's... No, nothing like that. Okay. No references to Chewbacca or anything.
Well, he doesn't say a lot, fortunately. So
good. Just kind of sits there. Anyway, all right. Okay, we've got another question. The chat room's going crazy again. Would you consider yourself a teacher? Ooh, there's a good one.
Yes. And it works out perfectly that my parents named me Gabriel because Gabriel's the messenger. But the good news for anybody listening and for anyone around is that everyone is the teacher, and we can all find something to tell somebody of value. And maybe, you know, like I said, the teacher figures it out when they have the right questions, and then they can answer them. So you first have to find the right questions. So, yeah, I believe that I am a teacher, but not that I'm any different than anybody else. So I just happen to know what I'm saying about this one thing.
Now, okay, now we're going random again. I flipped in your book, just randomly, to page 129, which I do with people when they're on the show with books. It says, I say it's my birthday. I say it's my birthday? Okay, I won't sing. I'm a really bad singer. My cat's ears go back when I sing. What are your thoughts on birthdays? Like, my birthday's in, like, 6 days, and I'm going to be 24. And birthdays bad or good? Because birthdays are pushing us closer to, you know, the whole death thing.
I'm going to be 39, which is just so weird to come out of my mouth, next month. And I know for anyone who's listening who's 59, you're like, oh, 39 is no big deal. You're still a kid. But to me, I was just 9. And I woke up and then here I am. And it's incredible how time flies. And you think about how much of your life has passed. And then I start getting a little depressed about it. And you're looking at your gray hairs in the mirror and you're thinking about how much time is you actually have left.
Gray hair's cute.
Thank you. Well, maybe for you find it cute, but I definitely don't. But, you know, that's a whole different story. So birthdays are definitely a little annoying. They definitely sting. And they used to sting a lot more than they do now because I was always waiting for something to do something extraordinary. And I knew time was running out. So that's why I'm not going to let another birthday pass without making something big happen. So thankfully, this birthday is coming up and I have nothing to cringe about anymore.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, my dad said it best when I was young, is that, yeah, birthdays are tough to deal with, but they're better than the alternative.
Yeah,
so,
that's what I was
thinking.
Yeah.
But I would bring a lot of perspective.
Yeah, Deb Scott's one of my buddies, and she does the Best People We Know show, and we do a lot of things. We do the Motivation Marathon together and stuff. We were just having this conversation earlier today about my dad's sick in the hospital and stuff, and so we were talking about how, you know, how much it just kind of sucks, you know, the whole death thing, but that it's really important to stay positive. Are you a positive person?
That's a doozy of a question. I know. I feel like I'm going to admit it to the world that I may or may not be positive.
Okay.
It's hard to stay positive,
isn't it? Sometimes.
I don't know if it's hard to be positive, but I am not unrealistically positive.
There
are people who – I'm sorry?
No, there you go. It's just keep going.
There are people, just to go to use Facebook as an example, you're like, hey, how you doing? And they give you like this whole rainbows and fairy tales and unicorns approach by like, oh, life is great and I'm so happy. And it's like, I just feel like they're a moment away from like going postal on somebody because I understand that you can be really happy and you're making the best of everything. But if you're coming across like as ultra happy, I feel like there's some big cover up happening. And I am ultra positive when someone says, oh, I might be diagnosed with cancer. I have no other response but, no, you're going to be fine. Because I feel like I have to be the crazy person to have complete faith. So I'm positive in that respect. Okay, here's the short of the answer. Yes, I am definitely positive because I know that things are working out exactly as they must. And I know that things are working out gracefully. And I know that because my intentions are always completely pure. So, yes, I am positive in that. But do I sit around with a big smile and happy all day? Not so much.
Okay. Yeah, I wondered that. Because, it's a pretty powerful book like that. And I wondered, you know, to write something like this, if, you know, you sit around, you know, with the rose-colored glasses all the time or if they change colors. And so, good, they change colors and you're real.
Yeah. I don't think you can write a book like mine and not feel the horrors of 9/11 and or watch a show about World War II and not see their faces about the people who've been there in Normandy. And if you can't feel that, then there's no way to write a book like mine. And if you can't feel that, there's no way you can even get anything from a book like mine because it's not all rainbows. I mean, every page of my book is basically reminding you that you're going to die. But it's doing that.
And what are you going to do about it?
Right, so you can start living. Because the only way to really start living is knowing that like there's an end coming at some point. So you have to move forward. And moving forward doesn't mean like writing a great American novel. If moving forward to you is just being at peace and watching the ocean all day and somehow providing for yourself, then that is the most beautiful thing that I can think of. Actually, I think I'm going to do that right after this.
Perfect. Can we talk a little bit about our buddy Diane?
Sure.
Yeah.
Do I have a buddy named Diane?
Yeah, well, you know, page one, gave the print so small on the bottom of the book. I can't see it. Let me hold the book farther away. 183. There's my old
Speaking about getting older. Oh, Diane Lane.
42. Yeah, you've got a crush. I heard J-Lo the other day, too, but I think you've got it more for Diane Lane. Diane, you know, I don't know if we can forward this around the Internet so Diane hears you or if you know her already, but what's up with Diane?
I don't know. I saw the movie The Outsiders, and I just saw how beautiful she is, and then she was actually cool enough to be like the cool rich girl who would actually talk to everybody, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And I thought this was real, you know, so I'm like, wow, she'll even talk to me, Diane Lane. So then I've been a fan ever since then.
Yeah, all right, we'll move on off the Diane thing. Okay, let's see. I think Gabe should start a column in the Miami Herald called Keeping It Real, kind of like a Dear Abby thing, but way cooler. Would you ever do something like that, Dear Gabe?
I was actually thinking about doing a Dear Gabe column or a Dear Fruit Fly column. And I was getting pretty close to doing it. So now maybe you gave me the little push to go in the right direction.
Yeah, you've got a whole fly thing going on. You have fly, I call them fly fans. And I think definitely, is your Halloween costume going to be a fly?
I might just dress up as me and scare the hell out of people.
Because it would be kind of funny if you were a fly and somebody was a fly swatter or, you know, something like that. That's funny.
I think I'll stay away from fly swatters, but I hear where you're going.
Okay. Karma's a bitch. 110. What's that all about?
Karma, is that the story about the guy's
That's the bartender
brother dying?
One. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I believe in karma big time. So
I believe in karma, but not the way that it's prescribed, let's say, in India with Hinduism, because I just don't know enough about it if it's real or not. There's no way for me to know about past lives or anything else, and whoever claims to know, there's no way for them to really know.
Right.
I just know that there is cause and effect, and whatever you put out will come back to you negatively, positively, but not in the same way. So I believe that karma is a law, kind of like gravity, like the done deal is nothing to be argued with. But even if you do find it something that you can argue with, it's kind of like self-preservation to live with karma or to keep that in the back of your head, because you never know about how horribly mean you could be to people and how that can come back to you magnified, or how beautiful you can be to people and how that can come back to you magnified. You just really don't know. So the golden rule completely paves their way on that one.
Yeah. Now, you know, we talk about death and things like that, and I want to go in a little bit more personally so people kind of get to know who Gabe is, like Gabe as a person. So we're going to pry a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure.
We're not going to go boxers or briefs or anything like that, but we're just going to kind of – what I want to know is when you talk about living life to the fullest every day
– Speedos, by the way. Not boxers or briefs, just Speedos.
Oh, no. You're not a Speedo guy, are you?
Would
you
think?
That just threw me off. Hold on. I forgot what I was saying. I'm trying to picture you in a Speedo. No, it doesn't work. Boxers. Okay, so you really threw me. I'm like red right now, I think, even. Okay, so what I was going to ask you was really, how do you take care of yourself? When you're living life positively and to the fullest and things like that, what do you do for yourself? I noticed you're pretty in shape. Do you do yoga and run and walk and things like that? And like, we always want to know when we're talking about being your best, what people eat and things like that. I know it's a strange question, but I'm fascinated by what people eat for their health.
Well, I can definitely do the food thing, talk about that. And just to be completely honest, I'm a vegetarian and I have been for a while. And once in a while, I'll be like, my buddy will be like, hey, let's grab a hamburger. And I'll say yes once in a while, just because life is short and I'll just go with my gut and just be nutty once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm no judgment to anyone else, and everybody has to live their own life. It's hard for me. My whole life is set up as I'm going to just try to end as much suffering as possible. And I can't sleep at night or believe that I'm doing the right thing or be authentic. I can't not feel like a phony if I'm eating meat just because I know that I'm adding to suffering on some level. I mean, if this is 100 years ago or if I'm killing the buffalo by myself with a bow and arrow, then I know. But just the way factory farming is and all that. And I'm sorry?
it's gross, isn't it? Since we talked a few weeks ago, I haven't. I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to do that. I feel even without that thinking behind it, just from a body perspective, my body feels so much better without meat. I don't know why. I've been doing vegetables and rice and things like that, a little bit of chicken and stuff, just because, you know, I didn't want to freak my system out completely. But
right.
Do you feel better?
The truth, no, I don't.
No? Okay.
I feel like my body will thrive probably better on meat. I just can't do it. But I do make sure that I eat some eggs just so I, you know, get a little bit of animal protein, because if I don't, then I start waking up completely depressed and feel like the sky is falling and I can't figure out why until I go have some eggs and then figure out why. I do the vegetarian thing and I do a little bit of yoga and I live on the beach, so I walk a lot on the beach and swim a little bit, but nothing crazy.
Yeah.
I just mentioned Byron Katie before, and she has got a great line that you try so hard to work on this perfect body and then you get hit by a car. So not that I'm worried about getting hit by a car, but
or have four kids.
Right, exactly. Well, I only have three. No, that's a joke. It's all about vanity when you start working out so hard, and that's great, but I don't want to have to keep that up. So I just try to be gross.
Yeah, exactly.
What'd
you say? Here's your thing.
My whole health thing is try not to be gross. That's my motto.
Try not to be gross. Yeah, that's me too. I just try not to. I try not to have to buy bigger pants. So you know, whatever works. Anyway, people want to connect with you, and so I want to give a couple websites out for you. So correct me if I'm wrong, but people can follow you on Facebook. You know, you're Gabe Berman. I don't know if that's a public Facebook or not, but you do have a fan page for Live Like a Fruit Fly. And then your blog is blog.livelikeafruitfly.com. And then you're also on Twitter at Gabe Berman. So people can connect with you in a variety of ways and know that it is really you. Yeah?
The best way by far is Facebook.
Facebook, yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And I don't even care about the fan page. You know, just friend me directly, that'd be great, so I can email back and forth. And... you know, that works. But blog.livelikeafruitfly, actually, that's where the sequel is being written right now. So you can go there and read the first 28, 29 chapters for free.
Yeah, cool.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you do to stay in shape? What do you do? What do you like to do hobby-wise and things like that? Do you read a lot? Do you, you know, play bingo? What do you do?
Yeah, I'm a professional bingo player. And you can catch me tonight at 9 o'clock on ABC in the big tournament. What do I do to mentally stay in shape?
Whatever.
Is that what you're asking?
I don't know. Just a question. Are you a big Monopoly fan? Or, I mean, what do you do?
I'm not a big board game. You can find me in two places. You can find me in the bookstore, and you can find me in Starbucks. Okay. And if I'm in Starbucks, I'm reading something or writing something. And if I'm in, I call it negative research. I go and I look through all the New Age books, and I find out what I don't want to say. And I just hang out in bookstores, and I look around, and I do a lot of people watching in the bookstore, and I just get inspired to write things there. But that's what I do. It's a little geeky, but that's where I hang out. But also, I live on the beach, so I spend a lot of time there, too.
On the beach, yeah. Do you go back to New York a lot, or do you just hang out in Florida?
I am in New York at least once a month, once every 6 weeks at most, because I'm very close to my family, and they're still there, so I see them often.
Often, yeah. What's your, of everything in your book, and this is a hard question, and I ask this of everybody who comes on the show with a book, what's your favorite chapter, or what's your favorite part of your book that you would want people to know, you know, this is the one thing I really love about this book that's written in here?
Believe it or not, the my favorite part is the only part that I had an issue with my publisher, which is the dedication. And the dedication says, the book is dedicated to the one person who never doubted me, which is me. And because if I didn't have 100% full faith, then Deepak Chopra thing wouldn't happen, Alan Combs wouldn't happen, getting published wouldn't happen, talking to you wouldn't happen, because you cannot allow anyone's feelings to get in the way or anyone's thoughts, oh, you'll never make it as a writer. Like, I don't, when someone says that to me, it sounds like it's a different language. I don't even hear it, because I know that it's completely up to me to kick the doors open. And once I do kick the doors open, then the universe kind of takes over. So that's my favorite part. And my publisher, they're so great. And whatever they said, my editor is a genius. So I just let her, whatever she thought was great, I even said, you're right, I'm wrong, just go with whatever you're thinking. And except for the dedication, she called me up and she said, this is a little bit too harsh and we can't have it that way. And she spoke for like 15 minutes and told me exactly why. And I said, I hear you, but it's completely non-negotiable because it sets up for the rest of the book. Just like it's so hardcore that you can do whatever you want to do. So as long as you fully believe in yourself, and that's why people love it. Like you have to, it has to start that way. And then she spoke for another 15 minutes about why it can't happen. And I said, I hear you and you're probably right, but it's completely non-negotiable.
Yeah.
And then she said, okay, so what you're saying is it's non-negotiable. And I said, exactly. So that's my favorite part of my book.
All right. What were you like in kindergarten?
What was I like in kindergarten?
Mm-hmm.
I used to do this bizarre thing. I used to make up these little patches, like patches that you'd put onto your shirt, that like an army badge. I used to make them out of paper and then glue it on my shirt with like actual glue and then come home and my mom would go bonkers. What was I like in kindergarten?
What did the patch say, though? Was it an army patch? What was the patch? Like an army patch?
It was probably some ridiculous Star Wars thing because I think I was in kindergarten when the first Star Wars came out, right around there. So, but I know this sounds nuts, but I was probably exactly the same the way that I am now. Just kind of got along with everybody, very introspective, was totally fine to hang out by myself and figure out that the big blocks go down on the bottom first. But knowing me, I probably figured out how to put the small blocks first and went backwards.
Could you read and write going into kindergarten? Or when you
the
were younger
thing.
Than that even?
No.
Yeah.
The crazy thing is my mom's a speech and language pathologist, and I literally didn't talk until I was like 3 and change. I was like 3 years old and something, and I just did not say a word. I guess I didn't want to. I understood everything. I just did not speak until late. So I don't think I was writing or reading it. I don't think I was writing or reading earlier than I was supposed to. I just was very normal.
Yeah. What about in high school? Were you the jock? Were you the nerd? Were you the just normal? Who were you in high school?
I think I was unclassifiable. I mean, if you asked my friends in high school what they thought about, like where they labeled me, they would probably all just say like you're just Gabe. If you look at my high school yearbook where people just wrote in there, it's like, thanks for being that one guy who wasn't like caught up in all this nonsense. Like I was friends with everybody, but really didn't hang out with everybody. I had my cool group of friends that I would hang with, and I could have been part of the jocks. And I could have been part of the, you know, the metalheads or anybody else, but I just, you know, just kind of did my own thing. And, you know, you pay your price for doing your own thing because you don't have as much fun and you're not as cool as everybody else. But I needed to just be authentic to myself since day one.
Yeah. Did you play sports in high school?
Play a lot of sports, but not for the school. I only just played with my buddies.
Yeah. Do you believe in destiny?
I do believe in destiny, but I believe that we are co-creating the destiny, that you can decide what your destiny is. And then, you know, you push as hard as you can, but there's also an element of surrender that you know, if you're 5'3" and you think your destiny is to play for the New York Yankees, it's not going to happen. But your destiny might be revealed to you by trying out for the New York Yankees and having everybody laugh at you. You might, you know, because of that, you might find what your true destiny is. So you have to, even though if you suck and you're scrawny, you have to try it anyway if you believe that that's what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Do you, what part in life, what does music do for you? What part of, with music, how does music work in your world?
Music is so central into my existence that it's one of those things that I don't know where I'd be or what I'd be doing without it. I put music on before I even go to the bathroom in the morning. I cannot brush my teeth without it having on. Like there is constantly music in the background of my life, just as a soundtrack. And it just can either set the mood or my mood will set what I'm listening to. But music is essential for everything. And since I secretly wanted to just be a musician more than anything else, even though I have absolutely no musical talent, I thank in the back of my book, it's kind of like liner notes from the old albums where people would thank, like, hey, I'd like to thank Eric Clapton and thank this person. And I actually thank every musician and band that I knew that I was listening to as I was writing it. So there's a whole list from the Beatles and Radiohead and Pat Metheny and Sting and Paul Simon. Like, I actually thank them in the back.
Can you play any instrument? Can you play the guitar or anything like that? Somebody wanted to know here in the chat room.
I play guitar, but I'm horrible. But if you don't play guitar, you'd be like, wow, that guy's pretty good. But in front of a real guitarist, wow, you're pretty horrible. And I can play the drum.
Piano. You can what? I said, that's the way I feel about the piano.
I can play the drums just because I have some natural rhythmic thing going, but I'm unsure how good I can be because, you know, when you're living in an apartment on the beach and there's a million people around you, it's hard to have a drum set.
Kind of. Do you, I hear that you're really, like the biggest country music fan ever.
Yeah, country music's my thing. I mean, me and Johnny Cash are like buddies. This is a joke, everybody. I am not into country music whatsoever.
And why?
Although Johnny Cash is pretty cool.
No, he's pretty cool. Yeah, we'll give him the free pass on the country music thing. But does it just bug you like it bugs me? It's just annoying.
I don't know.
It bugs me.
Well, I find the mass-produced country music very annoying and almost talentless. But country music that's real and full of soul, and I appreciate it. I can appreciate it as music. It just doesn't speak to me. And mm-hmm. You know, people can say to me, like, I don't understand how you can listen to a two-hour John Coltrane solo that sounds like noise. And I understand why you don't get it. But it's just one thing speaks to me and one thing doesn't, and it's definitely not country music.
Country music, yeah. What is your favorite kind of music?
I hate to be boring, but I really don't have a favorite type of music.
Okay, so just anything but country.
Right, it just needs to be something that just hits me on a cellular level. And I mean, I know this sounds kind of wussy, but if I had a dollar for every time that I've cried for music, I would just be able to give my book away for free and not care about music because I would already be a billionaire. Because sometimes music just hits me and I'm done and I have no choice but to cry, like, without thinking.
Yeah, we love it. They're just saying that they're a good thing that we backtracked on Johnny Cash. Okay,
yeah.
We hear you. Anybody have any questions for Gabe? I'm sitting here talking and talking and talking, getting to know Gabe here, and we've got 2 minutes left. So 2 minutes, guys. Anybody have anything they want to ask? And I guess let's plug the book again. We've talked with Gabe Berman now for an hour on the phone, and he's the author of Live Like a Fruit Fly, The Secret You Already Know, and it's endorsed by, you know, the powers that be. It's just an incredibly growing and popular book, and, you know, like I said, I think you're going to be the writer of our time, so I think people, you know, it's required reading. So I hope you guys all, you know, go out there and buy this book and talk to Gabe, because Gabe's real, and that's really neat, too. That's refreshing that you're just normal and you're just Gabe, because and reachable. I wonder, do you think, are you ready to be as famous as you're going to be?
Yeah, I am. I really am.
Yeah?
I might start charging for my autograph after a while, but no, but seriously, I don't care about being famous. The cool thing about being a writer is that people really won't recognize you, but if I can be famous by telling people to go live their life, then I'm definitely ready for that fame.
Yeah. Do you, what do you think will change in your life with a little bit of fame? And you only have a minute.
Well, I'm definitely going to get a convertible, but I know that's
all
not the
right
question you're asking.
The
beautiful thing is,
convertible.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different story.
If you go with the Speedo in the convertible, we're going to have another chat.
On a different station. What will change for me is absolutely nothing. It is just, if I am famous because of my book, I just love the fact that how many lives will be going in a better direction. So people aren't on their deathbed without regret, because that's the worst thing in the world, just having a life full of regret. And unfortunately, that's like a disease that's rampant through us.
Yeah. So, okay, so we got to wind up, but I just want to, we'll follow up on besteveryou.com and in the writing network, which, yay, we have 240 writers as of today. We got 240 writers. Can you believe that? At beynetwork.com. You guys are awesome. And we'll follow up with more Gabe stuff in those two areas. And then I just want to remind everybody that you can go to hcibooks.com to buy Gabe's book. It's a dollar cheaper on Walmart, which is cool. And, you know, if you're looking for it in the stores just yet, you know, maybe go online. We've got 20 seconds, Gabe. Thank you for being with me for an hour. It was a pleasure to get to know you. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, many blessings your way, much success, and everybody just go for it. You're going to be great.
I really appreciate your time.
All right, you take care. And everybody, thanks for listening and thanks for chatting, and we'll see you Tuesday with Jenny Shea. All right, take care.